Anyway, so you guys saw this that chick, right? The chick that LeBron was beefing with. Did you see her husband or whatever?
What, Daddy Carlos?
Vince McMahon.
Oh my God! How long has that dude been shooting up roids for, man? My God.
You know what's so funny? In the video, she's like, "Why would LeBron be picking on a 25-year-old? Like, you look like you're 40." Plastic surgery.
Yeah, when she said that, everyone who heard that was totally surprised. I thought she was like at least 35.
Yeah, that's a lot of surgery for a 25-year-old, man. It's a lot of work.
Like, her surgery made her look older.
Yeah.
like, how does that work? Like, her man probably paid for the surgery so that it wouldn't look as weird when he's like 55 dating a 25-year-old, like, just to bump her up like a decade or so.
He goes to the doctor and says, yo, make her look like 35 or 40 and just hook it up a bit. She won't know the difference.
Yeah,
just a bit older. Exactly. Just a little bit older. Not more.
Okay, stop there.
So you want me to play for your plastic surgery? Well, we're going to have to do it my way.
Man, that's so absurd. Also, what kind of dude is that lets his wife like yell at LeBron for him? You know what I mean? Like, imagine you're there and like, you're talking shit to LeBron, and then your wife or your like girlfriend just starts yelling at the guy for you. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, man up.
Yeah, like who would actually let that happen? Like,
be a man and throw a chair.
Yeah, throw your drink on the floor. Take your own mask off. Why are you letting her take her mask off?
Yeah, show that word rage.
It's funny because her friend had to hold her back.
It looked like the men were sitting separately from the women, right? Like they were in pairs. So it looked like the two women were sitting next to each other, and then the two men were sitting next to each other.
Yeah. Was the other guy that was with the husband also righted up?
I don't know. I couldn't see it. I just saw the
two women. Was it Vince McMahon?
It's Atlanta's Vince McMahon, yeah.
I would not be surprised.
Triple H.
Oh, man. Yo, funny fact. Triple H and I actually share the same birthday.
Wow.
Yeah, he's my celebrity birthday partner. How about that?
Your hashtag
your
blessed.
Your claim to
fame. Yeah.
I always thought you were more of a...
The old Isaiah Thomas, not the new one.
Oh, the OG.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take that. OG is great. Oh, well, I guess we can get started now. What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Hoops Corner. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, the Iceman himself. Josh Cohen, how you doing?
Feeling fine. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Much better than our audio issues, but, you know, make it work.
That's what you got to do, man. Just roll with it. Roll with the punch.
All right. This guy loves rolling with big punches. The banger in the paint. Rajon Walia, how you feeling?
You know what, man? I'm all roided up for today's episode.
I was gonna make a daddy joke, but I'm not calling you daddy. Daddy Raj, imagine that.
Let's not get carried away, Peter.
Daddy Rajon, man. Oh, that's gonna be the new name. Hoops Corner Pod with the Iceman and Daddy Rajon. Oh no. Alright, well, I think everyone liked our LeBron conversation. I hope they did, but guys, I think we gotta talk about maybe the third best player in the league right now. My boy, Nikola Jokic, is having an MVP-type season, man. He's averaging 26.8 points per game. That's 10th in the league. 11.8 rebounds for 6th. And at one point, he was leading the league in assists. But now he's averaging a measly 8.6 assists per game. That is 6th in the league. How many guys can you name off that are averaging or that are top 10 in all three of the major categories, right? And then you actually look at the Nuggets. Start off slow, you know, they lost that first game to Sacramento by a buzzer beater by Buddy Hield. Ugh, whatever. But, you know, the team slowly got it going. And then just as it was grooving, my boy MPJ goes down, a little bit of COVID action, has to be quarantined for, you know, 10 days. And then another 10 days. Who the hell knows how long MPJ was actually out? And also, this is a side note, but I love that the NBA just won't admit that players have COVID. Just let it out, man. It's really annoying to everybody. Just let it all out. But I digress. We go back, and then, I don't know, if you watch the Nuggets over the past, like, 5-10 games, you can see that this team is just focused on one guy and one guy only. Nikola Jokic is getting every touch whenever it starts. At the beginning of the game, at the end of the game. If you watch the fourth quarter of any of their tight games especially, the ball literally runs through him. He will decide what he does. And more times than not nowadays, especially, he's going to the bucket. Like, this guy is... He's going out there to score. And if you notice, he's averaging like 30-something in the past five games. And you can see the major difference now that he's not relying on his teammates that much anymore to score. You know, you're looking at a team with Jermichael Green, who they brought in, shooting like a career high in three-point percentage. Jamal Murray, not the same kind of player that we expected coming out of the bubble, but still improving as the days go on, right? Like, the guy's still really young. I mentioned MPJ earlier coming back from COVID. Hopefully he can actually start playing more than 18, 19 minutes per game. And I'm going to say it, guys, the best backup point guard in the league, Monte Morris, who has an assist to turnover ratio that probably rivals like Jose Calderon from back in the day. So if we look at the Nuggets right now, we're looking at a team that's fifth in plus minus. You're looking at 116 points per game. That's fourth in the league. Josh, man, I got to ask, are these Nuggets a real contender? Or more importantly, can Nikola Jokic actually contend for the MVP title? You know, that's what I actually really want to hear.
I mean, with the second part, he's absolutely, if not the front runner, he's second place to Joel, maybe LeBron, I suppose. I mean, he's my MVP right now. And obviously, he's your MVP. He's all of our MVPs. You watch him every night. He's literally showing up every night. And he's putting on a great performance, whether that's a triple-double or whether it's a situation where teams are now just single covering him like Utah did. And he just goes ape wild with, you know, these moves that you see in like a YMCA gym from these older guys who you don't think can play. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, that guy must have played like D1 somewhere. And then you ask him later on, you're like, oh, okay, he's the MVP of that league back in 1964. So he's playing the old man game right now, and nobody can stop him because he's so big. You can't switch guys onto him that are not of his, you know, weight essentially, and or height. And you know, if you keep the big guy on him, he's gonna take them outside and shoot his pick and pop threes, or he's gonna take them off the dribble, draw fouls, or do those little dink and dumper hook shots and floaters. So he's just on a whole nother level. Like, he can basically hit every single shot, every single type of post move you can think of. And his peak is right now.
Yeah. Like, I think Jokic is playing the best basketball that you can expect him to play. And he's, in my opinion, and I think we all agree right now, the front runner for MVP. His play is the reason why the Nuggets are even pushing a top four seed in the West. Without him, they would be struggling, and I think he has a real shot to win the MVP as long as he stays healthy, plays in the remainder of the games. I think this Denver team isn't as good as last year's team, or I think the other teams in the West have really improved, and I don't see them making it to the Western Conference Finals like they did last year, but I think their best chance of having a successful season is Jokic winning MVP.
Yeah, I think that if they make a move around the edges, like if they're the team that actually ends up getting PJ Tucker, I think they can make the Western Conference Finals again. But they need a guy like that in order to improve their defense, especially against the better teams, where they can rely on that type of forward every night to play really good defense on the better forwards in the NBA, whether that's LeBron or KD or whomever they're playing in a playoff series. So I think they need a guy like that. I mean, Jermichael Green's been really good for them, but he's not a guy you can really put on that level of player. And they don't really have that guy right now because Barton's just too small and he's been inconsistent as well overall. Gary Harris just got hurt as well. So they need to make some sort of trade. If they just stand pat as is, I agree. I don't think they're going to make the conference finals. I think their ceiling would be the second round and out. But they're a move away from being back to where they were last year, and if not, possibly better, depending on what kind of player they get.
Better? You mean you think they're a move away from making it to the actual finals?
I don't know. Potentially. I mean, I think we've all come to the determination that Jamal Murray saves his best performance for the playoffs. Like, he's actually played a pretty smart early in his career, which most guys don't do, and that he has a luxury sort of just to chill throughout the regular season and not have to turn it on all the time. Because Jokic is just on another level right now. So Murray's obviously going through some injuries too. But as long as he's okay by playoff time and he's, you know, performing the same way that he did last year, why not conference finals if they are able to make a move around the edges, especially in the forward spots? As like Raj said, they're not as good defensively, which is going to be key in the playoffs, especially if they play a team like the Clippers or LeBron. So if they can avoid those two teams, maybe they'll make the conference finals if one of those two teams slips and plays each other in the second round, if the LA teams play each other in the second round. But, you know, as of right now, I think they are a move away from being elite.
They could really use a player like Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, yeah, he'd fit pretty well right now.
It's a damn shame they never had a chance to really sign him or anything like that.
Yeah, right?
I don't think it was their choice. I think they offered him the money, and he just decided he wanted a bigger role. So, yeah, he was doing well in his situation there. I still stand by my thinking that he's going to shoot less than 40%. I've got to hold on to that right now. You know, it's not looking very good, but might want to dump that stock. But, you know, he's played well.
Is he shooting over 40% right now?
Oh, yeah. He's at, like, at least 43. I'm not sure what he's at after yesterday.
Oh, wow.
He's not shooting. He was up there. He was at, like, 25 points a game, you know, before the last couple of games.
Woo! Detroit basketball, my goodness. I'm okay with that. Yo, Raj, I need to ask you a question because, you know, I've been hearing a lot of rumblings about guys like Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell not really showing up the same way they did in the bubble or in the playoffs, right? So, I don't know. Am I crazy for thinking that we shouldn't expect guys to be dropping like 40 to 50 point games during the regular season consistently? Because that's pretty much what Mitchell and Murray did, right? Mitchell, if you remember, during that first series against them, had, I think, three games over 50 points. Same with Jamal Murray. So why were those expectations supposed to be brought into the regular season? Like, it makes no sense, right?
Yeah, well, I think, especially with the condensed season now, the teams are playing, what, four games in a week. And both of these players are really carrying the ball and carrying the offensive load for their respective teams. Obviously, with Denver, they have Jokic to help create. And I think now in the NBA, you're seeing players really understand that their narrative and their success is based off of their performance in the playoffs. Like, no matter how much regular season success you have, you don't want to be a player like Kemba Walker, where no one really considered him to be an elite guard because he never actually played in the playoffs. You make your name, you make your reputation in the playoffs. If Murray didn't have that crazy bubble playoff performance, then I don't think he would be considered one of the up-and-coming guards. Like, obviously, he has the talent, but the playoffs put him on the map. So they're doing kind of what the Rockets never really did in terms of really focusing more on the playoffs than the regular season. And I think it is a bit of a challenge to be able to turn it on just like that. But these players are young. They know how to score. They're offensive players. I really think both Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray will improve as the season goes on. But I don't expect them to be dropping 45, 50 points whenever they need. I think they're saving those games for the playoffs.
Yeah, if you can rely more on your teammates throughout the regular season and have a decent regular season but be healthy come playoff time and play less minutes, sort of like the Milwaukee model where you're just playing 30 minutes a game, or even, you know, San Antonio back in the day where they were resting a lot of their guys and only playing them 28 to 30 minutes and sometimes sacrificing games in the regular season just to make sure that these guys were healthy come playoff time. Sort of like the opposite of what Brooklyn's doing right now, because you really have to worry about a guy like KD playing 37 minutes a game or whatever it is and playing all these overtime games. Obviously getting some rest recently with a couple games off. But I would still worry about that type of situation where you don't really have a lot of depth around those guys and just getting those guys through the regular season without a major injury.
You mean coming off an Achilles tear, playing 37 minutes a game isn't the best idea? Sounds logical to me.
Yeah, and you know, you watch yesterday's game and he's 11 for 13 from the field and you're like, you want more KD in the offense, but at the same time, you don't want to get the guy injured by asking him to do too much against elite wing players with, you know, Kawhi and PG, but you know, he was cooking them yesterday.
Yeah. That was like the one game where Brooklyn's offense just flowed exactly how everyone says. Like, you know, ideally if this were to happen, Brooklyn would be unbeatable. And it's pretty much what happened, right? Like, Harden was on fire. Kyrie was clearly on fire, dropping 39. And KD, you said, was 11 of 13, right? Like, each guy had their turn. And each guy was super productive and efficient in that time. So, that was, like, the concept of it was like perfect for Brooklyn, right? Like everything just came together perfectly.
Yeah, they played their most complete game yesterday overall. Even their defense wasn't that bad. Like even though the Clippers scored 120 points or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the defense on Kawhi throughout the game was actually pretty good in like the middle part of the game. Kawhi started like 5 for 5 and then he went like 1 for 7 after that. And then the fourth quarter, he started to pick it up a bit. But overall, like their defense was actually half decent yesterday, especially when Jordan wasn't out there. and it was smart of Nash to start Jeff Green in that situation too, since, you know, the Clippers were starting Serge and you don't want DeAndre Jordan on Serge in that type of situation, but you're just guaranteeing an open shot either way, whether it's for the ball handler or for Serge at the 3-point line. And I saw people online yesterday, like giving it to Nash for fouling late in the game, just to ensure that the Clippers couldn't get off a 3-point shot. And the Clippers only had like one timeout left with 10 seconds left. Nash fouled, I think, 3 straight possessions to where the Clippers finally took their last timeout. And they were basically out of time at that point in order to get a shot off. So he played, made the right plays. Like he made the right coaching decisions in that situation. So Nash has been all right.
Yeah, he's been okay. That was actually, watching that game, I got like major flashbacks of the 2012-2013 OKC Thunder between Durant, Jeff Green was there, Reggie Jackson, Serge, Harden, obviously. The only person missing was Westbrook.
You mean Kendrick Perkins?
Well, no, Perkins or Jeff Green, you know? It's one or the other.
I think DeAndre Jordan is the new Kendrick Perkins, though, right?
God.
He is. Like, everyone thinks he shouldn't play. He's not very good anymore. And he's out there for what reason?
A morale booster.
Friendship.
Friendship.
I mean, the guy can catch lobs, I suppose. That's one thing he has over, I guess, there's no real backup behind him. I mean, they have their rookie, but he's not very good yet.
No, they got Pelle?
Norvell Pelle, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I actually liked him with the Sixers last year. He was actually all right.
Yeah, along with their, like, 80 other centers. Yeah.
I don't think he's going to play in the playoffs, but, you know, he's a guy you should play in the regular season just to, like, eat up some minutes because he can block shots.
They need Reggie Evans on that team.
Yeah, bring him back.
Yeah. Anyways, going back to the Nuggets. Raj, can MPJ be the answer to this, like, to the situation at the three here that's a little lacking?
Yeah, I think offensively he can provide some scoring to really help balance out their attack. But I think the biggest question with the Nuggets, and it will be especially if they want to compete in the West, is really having the bodies to compete with the wings, like the Paul Georges, the Kawhi Leonards, the LeBron James. Having like bodies that they can throw at them. And obviously you have Millsap, but like Millsap's a shadow of his former self, and I don't think he's going to hold up very well in the playoffs for lots of consecutive possessions and consecutive games. So I think obviously we all know that Michael Porter Jr.'s defense is, to put it lightly, lackluster. So I think the Nuggets' problems more on the defensive end, and adding a body like PJ Tucker would be huge. But I also think this is the time where MPJ needs to develop his offensive game. He needs to boost up his confidence, has to take more shots. He's a little too inconsistent for my liking. One game he'll put up like 22 points, and the next game he'll have like 8 points on 3-for-11 shooting. So I think he needs to improve for Denver to really take a step forward.
Yeah, the first thing is he needs to start again. And they need to figure out, as you said, like what kind of usage he gets, because he's going to be really important for them in the playoffs when things slow down. And you can't just rely solely on Murray and Jokic. You need him to also produce and produce consistently every game. And as you mentioned, like they are, again, just one piece away. They need a wing defender. And if it's not going to be PJ Tucker, they have to look at the other teams that could be potentially tanking, like a Minnesota, for example, even though Minnesota doesn't own their own pick if it's outside the top four. But, you know, a guy like Okogie would be, like, amazing on the Nuggets. They just need a guy that can really clamp down on people. Even though Okogie doesn't do a lot offensively, like, yeah, a guy like that can really clamp down on the better players and slow them down a bit would be key.
A guy like Okogie would be way too young for this team, too, right? Like, you want obviously you want a strong perimeter defender, but you want someone who's actually been around, because none of these guys on this team have really won anything, right? Like, who's the elder statesman other than Paul Millsap? It's Jamichael Green. You're looking at two guys who played the four, and I think the furthest they've gone, like, either of them has ever gone is to the conference finals at most, right? Like, I think Millsap's only gone as far as that Atlanta team went when they had five All-Stars. And I'm just assuming Jamichael Green has gone far in the playoffs. I actually have no idea if he's gotten that far. So, I mean, I want someone with veteran presence here, too. Not just, like, a random young guy to be thrown into the fire.
True. Yeah, I know Josh is gonna hate me, but I'm going to say a great player in the system. I don't think they have any chance of getting him just because Phoenix is competing, but Jay Crowder would work.
Oh my god. Oh, that's gold.
You know, I'll say one positive thing about Jay Crowder. He has some really, really great no-look passes. And he's one of those guys you would think that would never be a good passer, but he has these moments where, like, he'll look off somebody and then throw an insane pass to, like, DeAndre Ayton underneath the basket. And you're like, did Chris Paul pass that? And then you were, like, rewind. You're like, oh, that shit, that was Jay Crowder.
See?
Okay.
I think he could work on a team like Denver. He offers spacing. He's agile. He can shoot the ball. And I think he would work. Obviously, there's a lot of players. Like, even a player like Royce O'Neal on this team. They just need a player that really plays the three, kind of obviously the classic 3-and-D mold, and a body to throw at wing defenders, because, again, Millsap is not going to be the solution going down the road.
Two more names. First one, Thaddeus Young. I think he'd be a really good fit.
Yep.
And he's going to be available as well. And he's having his best passing season ever, which is surprising.
Yep.
And he's, you know, he was a guy that really anchored the Pacers defense a couple of years ago, which is not something you'd expect, but he was really good in the playoffs for them.
And this ferocious Bulls defense.
Yeah. I'm marking him for that.
Yeah.
But the other guy is Larry Nance Jr. I think Larry Nance would be an amazing fit. He's leading the league in steals. You know, he's switchable on defense. He's been in the league for a while. He has playoff experience. He went to the finals with LeBron. Not that it means a lot, but, you know, it's something.
Hey, he was there.
He was there. Yeah. And
but I
play backup five too. Like, he's extremely switchable. He's a good teammate. Like, even the games recently, he took like two or three shots and he played 40 minutes. He doesn't care about shots. It's a perfect type of guy you need in the Nuggets team.
And he can cut.
Yeah, I think he'd be a great fit. But I think the issue with both those players are, I think, the spacing. They're both not known to take enough three-point shots and shoot at a high enough clip.
You know, Nance has improved his three-point shot, though, over the course of the last couple of years. He doesn't take them at a high volume, but he's hitting them at a decent clip. So, but I don't know. He's just a really good team player. So I think if you get one of those two guys, and even if they just play 25 minutes a game, it's an upgrade from what you have right now, because, you know, Millsap's okay, but you're not going to get anywhere with him.
Can we figure out a trade that gets Larry Nance Jr. and JaVale McGee back to Denver? Maybe give up a little Will Barton action?
That's not bad.
Yeah. I don't know how the contracts match up. I assume it works, but...
Yeah, but I don't think Cleveland's in the market for another ball-heavy scoring guard.
Yeah. That's true. I don't know what Cleveland's in the market for, to be honest. I don't think they know either.
And you have no idea what they're going to be doing with Drummond either. So I think a lot of their trade deadline action is going to be centered around whether or not they can get anything for him. Or if maybe they just do the same type of move and trade him for a second round pick or something.
Maybe they can send Isaiah Hartenstein also to Cleveland, because they just love collecting bigs now.
They love their centers almost as much as Detroit.
Ooh, what about Dorian Finney-Smith to Denver? Does that work? Good 3-and-D player.
Yeah, but
he's too important to Dallas. Mm. Like, he's a main cog in their system.
Mm. Their system.
He's not the player they need, though. Like, you're on the right track. Like, that type of player that can just, like, you know, not lock down players, but play really good defense and just be a guy that stands in the corner.
Well, this Dallas system doesn't look very good this year, guys, because Luka showing up real fat and seems to be exactly more like James Harden by the day. He's not moving very well out there. He just looks disinterested. He does that thing whenever he gives up the ball, he just, like, chills. He legit just doesn't move. I don't know what else to say. The guy's got no pop this year. It's really sad to watch because, as you know, last year as one of the best offenses in history, compared to this year, they look so boring. Like, everything just looks so dull with this Dallas team. I don't know, like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the personnel. I don't know if it's the system that they're running now. Maybe it's because they tried to transition more into, like, to focus on defense instead of offense, which, you know, obviously led to the Josh Richardson for a Seth Curry trade. But there's just something off with this Dallas team, man. Like, Josh, what the hell? This is your squad. This is your guy. He's fat.
He's starting to slim down, though. I think he's lost a few pounds over the course of the last couple of weeks. He's on that slim fast diet and just playing his way into shape. You know, he's actually played really well the last few weeks after a slow start. But their bigger issue is they're basically the Miami of the West, where they've just had like so many COVID and injury related, you know, issues. And last game was the first game they finally had all their guys, and Kleba maybe played 10 minutes from what I watched, if I remember correctly. And he had one of the, like, he had an off the dribble three that like went 10 feet behind the backboard. As a big Kleba fan, like, oh, that was tough to watch, but he was shooting like 50% from the 3-point line before that game, obviously. So I think with them, it's just more so a matter of getting these guys to just, you know, play together in this lineup and see what they have over the course of the next 2 to 3 weeks. And then at that point, if they're still losing, then you might look into something bigger. But I think you got to give this team time to really start to gel and figure out what they have.
No, I'm completely on the opposite side of the spectrum. I think this Dallas team overperformed last year. Obviously, they were one of the best offenses, and they played a very fast style, run and gun. And they were making their shots, obviously, for the course of the year, and Luka was killing it. But if you look at this team and you just remove Luka Doncic from this lineup, this team doesn't really do anything particularly well. And they don't really, on defensively, can take away a specific aspect of the game. And obviously, having Luka, a top five player in the NBA, when he's playing well in shape, they can win some games. But I just don't think they have the talent. Like, I really look at their roster and look at the players they have in the skilled positions and how many players can win individual matchups, and I don't think they can. And the way I look at them is they're a team kind of like when you play basketball in high school or in an organized league. They're like a team that's super well coached. They have a system, but once teams start playing them enough and people figure out like their tendencies, the way they play, they just don't have enough raw athleticism to compete. And I think that's really catching up to them. And I really do think they're going to have to make some drastic moves. I don't think this lineup or this team is anywhere good enough to make the playoffs in the West.
Whoa! Dropping bombs. I like it.
Third. Wow.
I like it.
I mean, I don't necessarily disagree at this point either, because they've been pretty awful, man.
I mean, they've been in a lot of close games too, and you know, Porzingis hasn't really shown up to the level. Like, his numbers are okay, like his raw numbers are fine, but he's not doing the same things that he did last year, especially like in lineups where Luka's not in. He was just dominant a lot of the time, and he was scoring the ball really well in different scenarios. And this year, it's mostly just like pick and pops, or he just get the ball in a mismatch in the post, turn, and then just try to shoot over the smaller defender instead of trying to get in the paint, draw fouls, or just get a better look. He doesn't, like, the problem with Porzingis is he doesn't work hard enough to get his shots. Like, he thinks that he needs to be this like the superstar player, but yet he's not willing to put in the work. Like, he has no lower body strength. Like, the fact that he, you know, in this, what is it, year 5 or 6 now, and he still can't back guys down. Like, a guy like, you know, Boris Diaw obviously gained a lot of weight going back to Boris, obviously, because we always have to talk about him once every podcast.
Oh, man.
But he learned that little crab dribble in order to, like, back guys down but not overpower them to where they get called for an offensive foul. And Porzingis just doesn't want to do that, either because he's just lazy as hell or he just can't put the move to memory. I don't know what it is with him. He's super talented, but there's something missing with him.
He's shooting half the free throw attempts that he did last year. Last year he was around like 6. I think this year he's around 2.8 field goal or free throw attempts. That's just awful. Like, I guess part of it is also due to him coming back from like a severe ankle injury. So, you know, like, either you're mentally just not there, like, your body takes time, you're like, it takes a lot for you to get past that mental hump, right? But like, he's not mobile, his shot looks flat, he just doesn't look comfortable whatsoever. And I mean, hopefully he can play himself back into it, but it's not looking great, Josh. And I don't know, if this continues for another like 5 maybe 10 games at most, I'd easily have to join Raj at that point by saying they're not making the playoffs, because like we've been saying this whole time, the West is deep. Can't chill for that long.
No, I agree with that. It's just, the other thing is too, like, maybe this is part of it. Like, he's been playing power forward with, you know, Kleba out of the lineup since Willie Cauley-Stein started a bunch of games. So, you know, last year when they started him as center, like, he really started to pop, and he was averaging like 24 points a game with all that shooting around him, you know, Seth Curry on the floor and such. So maybe now that Kleba's back and they don't have to play Willie Cauley-Stein with Porzingis as much anymore, unless they're going against like a Joel Embiid type. But even then, like, Cauley-Stein has no chance against those types anyway. But
no,
you know, at least it limits Porzingis' wear and tear overall. But, you know, now that Porzingis is actually playing center, he has no excuse. So the next 5 or 10 games are going to be pretty telling for them.
They're going to spread the floor with Josh Richardson shooting 28.6% from the three line. That's your spreading the floor these days.
That's definitely got to improve. But honestly, looking at their schedule, like, they have a pretty good lineup of games coming up for them to improve. I mean, they have the Hawks tonight. They got the Warriors twice, Timberwolves, Hawks again, Pelicans, and then the Trailblazers, who are extremely injured, Pistons. And then they finally have a team that's on the rise right now with the Rockets and the Grizzlies and the Celtics and Sixers. So the next like 5 or 6 games are very winnable for them.
And then very losable the 5 after that.
But hopefully they're rolling at that point. They actually get like a few of those games, because if they don't, they're going to be screwed, obviously, like you said.
Dude, don't sleep on Detroit, man. That's all I'm saying.
They beat the good teams. They lose to all the bad ones, though.
It's going to be a DeLon Wright revenge game.
You know, if Detroit could ever make the play-in game and then make the playoffs, they got a shot to actually move on, because all they do is beat elite teams. That's logic right there.
They should just move to the West.
Yeah, look at their wins. They beat, like, what? They beat Philadelphia. They beat Phoenix. They beat the Lakers.
Hold on. Don't put Phoenix as an elite team, okay? Relax.
Hey.
Relax.
Hey, Peter.
Top 4 seed this year. I told you.
Peter, let's just remember that Phoenix and DeAndre Ayton is, what, 8-2? Or 8-1 against Luka Doncic now?
DeAndre Ayton is?
Yes. 8-1 against Luka Doncic.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to subtract 25 games from DeAndre Ayton's season automatically. Just a matter of time before he comes out with PEDs again. Maybe he goes to the same dealer as Daddy Carlos.
I was about to say the same thing.
Maybe Daddy Carlos is the dealer.
Oh, okay.
One day, John Raiden shows up to camp and he's all like tanned.
He's tanned. Oh, well, apparently, John Collins got it from Daddy Carlos.
Oh, see, now we're talking. Now we're talking Atlanta. Atlanta connections here. I like that. So, what are we thinking for the Mavs right now? Like, play-in tournament? Or playing games, whatever they're called at this point?
The Mavs will be fine. They're going to be a top, I guess, maybe 7 seed. Maybe they'll be in the play-in, but...
You think they'll be a 7 seed?
I'm assuming my prediction. They'll be a 6 or 7 seed.
Oh, wow. So right now, like 5 to 7, go Phoenix, Memphis, Portland, and then Houston has the 8. So you think that Dallas is going to overcome one of those teams?
Okay. Come on. A couple of weeks ago, we were not talking about Houston making the playoffs. Let's be real here.
Yo, I wasn't planning on doing this, but this Houston team is, they firing, man. This whole, like, John Wall takes his turn, and then Victor Oladipo takes his turn, and then John Wall takes his turn, and then Victor Oladipo takes his turn thing. It's working. So I'm not...
Hottest team in the NBA right now.
Think of a better defensive backcourt than those two.
Lugans, Dort, and SGA.
Yo, relax.
Anybody with Lugans, Dort.
Oh my goodness. No, I mean, like, Houston's flowing, man. And
they are, but you know, it's what, a quarter through the season? Like, what are we talking about here? How long is the fire going to burn for? How long are those guys going to stay pissed off?
Hey, man, they're above 500, unlike Dallas.
You know, maybe the reason why Dallas is not playing as well is because Houston took their assistant coach who was running their offense.
Ooh, there you go. There it is. Sup, Raj?
Yeah, so I'm going to point something out. I think that the Mavs are going to be the worst team in Texas.
Oh, my God. What are we doing here? Worse than the Spurs, huh?
They'll be neck and neck with the Spurs.
Yeah, it's just disrespectful.
Oh, my goodness. That's hilarious. All right, this leads me into our next segment. I'm bringing something new in, guys. I'm calling this buy or sell. It's very obvious. Because of the GameStop stuff last week, we're going to have to do some buying and selling of some NBA stock. Nice and easy. So I'm going to name you off some topics. You tell me if you're buying and selling. Give me a quick blurb. Firstly, Bradley Beal staying in Washington until the offseason. Are we buying or selling this, Josh?
Sell. I mean, if they're smart, they're going to trade him at the trade deadline because his value is at his highest right now. He's averaging 33, 34 points per game, something along those lines. And they're not winning. Yeah, I mean, they're not in a good situation right now. Like, their starting center is going to be out for the entire season. Westbrook doesn't look like himself. He might just be washed at this point. And they're just not going anywhere. So why not trade him now, get a bunch of draft assets, and just treat this as if, you know, you're basically OKC, tank the rest of the season, get a top five pick, and, you know, get a bunch of draft assets and maybe a couple good young players for him.
Wow. Raj, are you buying or selling Bradley Beal staying with Washington?
I'm buying. He has a trade clause. He signed a big contract there. How many athletes go out in the media and say, I want to stay, I don't like the narrative? It's not the team, it's the individual who comes out and says, I want to stay. He clearly focuses more on just being a loyal NBA servant to his Washington Wizards, and he's staying.
Damn. I think it might, you know, more so be to do with his like personal life too, because he just got engaged, right? If I'm not mistaken, or married, one, two?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so I mean, during the pandemic, like, why would you want to move cities? So maybe it's just that part of it. Maybe it's going to be an off-season thing where, like, he, you know, maybe once everyone gets the vaccine, it's going to be like, okay, I feel more comfortable in, you know, moving now from Washington to somewhere else.
To Atlanta. Straight to Atlanta.
Josh is dropping the TMZ.
I might be right.
Oh, man. All right, let's keep it moving. Andrew Wiggins stocked as a whole. My man is averaging 17.7 points, 4.8 rebounds, 2.2 assists, shooting 46% from the field, and a career high 38.5 3-point percentage. Buy or sell?
I'm gonna go here. I'm gonna buy Andrew Wiggins His value. How low is his value?
Yeah, Andrew Wiggins came into the season with an all-time low value. Josh, this is the time to buy in. Now. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm buying. Like, I think if you look at his game, he's playing basketball with the Golden State Warriors, who really don't have any big expectations. Steph Curry's putting up crazy numbers. There's no pressure on him to succeed or be the key cog in the wheel. He's obviously looking much better than Kelly Oubre. So maybe the whole thing with Andrew Wiggins is he just needed someone shittier than him, that people would take the hate away from him. And I think really he's playing well, and I really look forward to a situation where Klay Thompson comes back and he's the third option.
Oh my God, why are we doing this again? This happens every year. When are we gonna learn?
Oh, never. I told you, man, I told you during the offseason, if Klay hadn't gotten hurt, Andrew Wiggins as a third option is great. Like, take away the value behind his contract, you know, like, get rid of that. Just the player.
You can't, though.
Can't you?
His contract negates you from making better moves around the edges and, like, improving your roster. It's a big part of it. He makes, what, $30 million a year? And, you know, obviously there's a time every year where he averages, like, 30 points a game throughout the course of 5 or 6 games. And obviously he's been more consistent overall with, like, his overall impact this season, because he hasn't really had almost any games where he's taken more field goals than he's had points. So he has been a lot more efficient this year, which is good.
See?
And defensively, he's been pretty good too.
See?
But I'm still a non-believer. Like, there's going to be some point this, you know, regular season where he starts taking these ridiculous, like, post-up mid-range shots again. He's gonna revert back to who he is, because that's who he is.
Once Steph gets hurt again, that's when it'll happen. Moving on. the Toronto Raptors in this form, with Fred VanVleet dropping a franchise high 54 points on Tuesday night against the Orlando Magic. Are we buying or selling stock on this Raptors team as a whole?
Oh, I'm selling. This team needed a Herculean performance by VanVleet to beat the Orlando Magic. Obviously, they have injuries to OG now, and I won't be surprised if this is kind of a recurrent theme, not with OG, but with the Raptors just having injuries, with a lot of their players being relied on. And you can't expect Lowry and Fred VanVleet to score 70% of your team's points every game and carry them going forward. So I think they're not going to be making the playoffs. I think Josh has already admitted this. This is just a few highlights of the season, and this is just to improve their game, to make sure that these players individually are playing with high confidence, and hopefully Masai makes a move and makes this team competitive again in the future.
Yeah, I am also selling. I'm basically sold on everything so far, so I'm going to continue that trend. And, you know, and usually by the 20 game mark, you can tell which teams are going to make the playoffs historically. And we're almost at that point, especially in a 72 game season. It's going to be less, obviously. So, you know, obviously they've won the last two games against an absolutely terrible Orlando team. But much like Dallas, this month and the next few games is going to really determine which direction they go in, because they have a really long road trip coming up. They got at Nets, at Hawks, at Grizzlies, and then they got a winnable game against at, you know, Washington. Then they got the Celtics in Boston, Timberwolves, and then you got at Milwaukee again. That's going to be a really tough stretch. And you end the month with the Sixers twice, the Heat and the Rockets, and then you got the Bulls, who are decent as of right now. Anyway. So it's going to be a really rough stretch, especially if guys like OG and Norm keep going in and out of the lineup. And overall, like, the way the Raptors play is just, it's hard to watch. Like, the percentage of their points that come from the three-point line and their overall attempts, too. I'll be honest with you, I haven't watched the last couple of their games because I'm pretty disgusted with how they play.
Wow. I was not expecting that.
I did watch VanVleet's highlights yesterday, though.
Yeah, of course you watched VanVleet's highlights. Who didn't watch those? Come on, man. Did you think he was going to beat Danielle Marshall's record of 12 threes?
I mean, when you see he has, I think, what, 8 or 9 threes in the first half, you would think so. But unfortunately, they started, I guess, double-teaming him throughout the game and, you know, made him take, you know, shots off the dribble at the basket. So that's disappointing, but he still got his 54.
Yeah. Terrence Ross finally played defense. How about that? Second half defense from Terrence Ross.
Like, yeah, they held him to 54 points. Yeah.
Just for the record, I'm buying stock on this Raptors team because I figure it's hella low, man.
Oh,
they're
my
sitting
God.
In ninth place right now, 9-12 as of recording on Wednesday night here, and there's only one way to go. They're only going to go up. They're going to make the playoffs.
What?
Oh. Raj, they're in ninth.
They're not making the playoffs.
You think that that Cleveland or Charlotte is going to outperform them?
Well, I think Miami is going to go up above them.
Miami's 3 games behind them. 2.
Yeah, 2. And Miami's obviously had, what, more than half of their games without 2 or 3 key pieces. I think Orlando is probably going to have a better season than the Raptors.
Okay, relax. No. Let's stop right there.
That's where we draw the line.
We are not accepting that blasphemy. I want the Raptors to tank, but they're no way worse than the Magic right now.
The Magic literally lost their second best player for 4 to 6 weeks. Because
I want Raj to name their starting five right now. Off the top of your head.
Nikola Vucevic?
Yo, don't cheat, Raj.
Yeah, no cheating.
Don't cheat.
No, I'm not.
We're watching your eyes right
now. Vucevic, Aaron Gordon?
Hurt. No, he's out.
Oh. Well, Evan Fournier?
Yeah, yeah.
Cole Anthony?
Yep.
Okay.
The guard from North Carolina. Is Terrence Ross now starting?
No.
Mm-mm. Mo Bamba?
Nope. Been hurt all year.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck about that magic.
They're starting James Ennis and Gary Clark at the wings. There's no chance they're going to be better than the Raptors. At least the Raptors have, like, starting caliber players in their team.
I actually didn't know Gary Clark was still in the league. I'll be honest with you. I thought he was out of the league. Good for him. Get your checks, man.
Indeed.
All right, last topic, guys. DeMar DeRozan, our favorite ex-Raptor, leading the Spurs with 19.5. He is the leader of the San Antonio Spurs, averaging 19.5 points, 6.5 assists, and almost 5 rebounds. And apparently he's only veteran because LaMarcus Aldridge is 35 years old and seems to not be able to run the floor anymore. Like, even worse than before. Josh, are you finally buying into DeMar?
No.
Oh, okay. Raj?
I think he gets way too much disrespect in this podcast. You know what? He's one of those players that strives in the regular season. He's what maybe we expect like players like Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell to be, have a huge regular season and be able to carry that through in the playoffs. But they saw what happened to DeMar. They're smarter than that. They know that they should save their energy. But again, putting together good performances in the regular season is something to be proud of. So I'm still selling stock on DeMar DeRozan. I think that this is probably his peak performance, especially later on in his career. But hey, the Spurs are, what, almost 500? I think they're going to be the team that ends up on the 8-9 and in the play-in game.
I buy all of that. Seems to be, I don't know, man. Spurs going to Spurs. That's all you can really say. This team just always comes up with random players, and Keldon Johnson seems to be the guy this year.
You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of Richard Jefferson.
Keldon Johnson?
Yeah. Like, Richard Jefferson, his first couple of years, is like a super athlete. Mm-hmm. And he was in really good shape. And he would just body guys. And yeah. Johnson doesn't take a lot of threes, but he gets to the bucket. And Richard Jefferson, in his first couple of years, is like really good at getting the basket and getting to the free throw line. And they're both built the same sort of way, too. Like, Keldon Johnson, I think we discussed this before, but he's basically what Joey Graham should have been. If Joey Graham wasn't such a robot playing basketball.
Yes. I was going to say he reminds me of Harrison Barnes. Like Golden State Warriors Harrison Barnes. Yo, man.
Why are you insulting him like that?
The similarities are there, Josh. Black Falcon.
Black, no. Harrison Barnes is just, I mean, he's having a good year this year. But... $90 million, man. $90 million for that. I don't understand basketball sometimes.
Anyways, that's all the time we've got for this week. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe on iTunes. You can leave us some comments. It'll help with the algorithm. Thank you very much. You can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, all the major podcast platforms. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Hoops Corner Pod. And until next time, peace.